Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, sounds like we're having some interference there. I have no idea what that noise was. Okay, this is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, May 31st, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla Ruckert's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the websites llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website bringforth.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. And that's bring4th.org. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. We've been gone for a while due to Carla being out for her surgery, and we're so glad to have you back now. Carla, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. I'm really happy to be back, too. I'm still on a Clinitron bed healing up a pressure sore that was part of my 95% of the wound is all healed up from the skin graft, but a couple of stitches on the other side got messed up, and so I'm healing up that last 5%, and hopefully in a few weeks I'll be up and at 'em.
Okay, well, I'm so glad to hear that. I know everybody's missed you, so we're just really happy that you're feeling well enough to do the show again. And I know everybody will continue to hold you in our prayers for that final healing for you.
I greatly appreciate it. It's made all the difference.
Okay. All right. And Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. We're getting rain in Kentucky. The gardens are growing, and I've had a chance to work outside and make things look good again after
all right.
Not tending to them for about 11 years during my lawn service work.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we have a live caller holding, so I'm going to go straight to her, and then we'll go to our opening riff, okay? So, let's see here. Are you there with us?
Hello?
Carla? Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, we have another Carla here, so we got two Carlas on now. Hi, Carla.
Hello. How are you?
Doing good.
I have a question. Now, are you going to be answering psychic questions, or is it just like information about spirituality?
It's questions about spirituality.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
The psychic phone was the one that got mixed up with ours. And
oh, okay. Then I'm mixed up, too. I am sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay,
I'll
thank
help you.
You
find the right number and find out what you want to know.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, there you go. Ironic, isn't
okay.
it?
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, they must be some other psychic show right before ours or something like that. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and go to the opening riff then. And not quite sure what session this is. Do you remember what session this is, Carla?
First session.
Oh, the very first session. Okay. From Ra. Let us consider for a moment. Consider thought. What is it, my friends, to take thought? Took you then thought today? What thoughts did you think today? What thoughts were part of the original thought today? In how many of your thoughts did the creation abide? Was love contained? And was service freely given? You are not part of a material universe. You are part of a thought. You are dancing in a ballroom in which there is no material. You are dancing thoughts. You move your body, your mind, and your spirit in somewhat eccentric patterns, for you have not completely grasped the concept that you are part of the original thought.
Thank you, Monica. This is probably my favorite quotation of all the things that the Ra group ever said. And it strikes so completely to the heart of their message that I visit it from time to time and beg your indulgence. Obviously, it seems as though we are indeed part of a material universe. The evidence is overwhelming. Our five senses are all senses of our body, telling us what's going on around us. It has, however, escaped the notice of most philosophers that everything that's going on inside of us is only tangential to our physical universe. We see something happen through our very shuttered senses. We get our impressions. Maybe 10% of what we're seeing is what our eyes and ears actually pick up. The rest is fill. And before we can react, our inner self pours into that information from outside. Who knows how we will react? It depends on what kind of ego we have, what kind of discipline we have, what kind of hold on our impulses we have. But you can almost be guaranteed that what our reaction is has more to do with what's going on inside of us than what's going on in the outside world. In the Law of One Information, the outside world is in actuality a hall of mirrors. In this waking dream that we call life, everything and everybody that we see is all about us. If we are disturbed by someone, we ask ourselves, why did we become disturbed? What within us got caught on that person? Why are we irritated? Why are we disgusted? Why does it bother us? The same can be said of our positive feelings of admiration and joy. All those wonderful positive feelings. Something spoke to us because we responded to that. Something resonated within us. If we admire somebody, if someone is our hero or heroine, you can be sure that there is within you that hero. And if someone is a villain, trust that you also, in ways you may not have explored, are that villain. I would not want to encourage you to explore the negative or shadow side of your personality except in your head, in your thoughts. it matters what we do in the outside world. It matters deeply. Because the outside world is a palette of our artistry. We draw the pictures that come from us. We express ourselves in ways that are very telling and speak of our thoughts. We pour into life the children of our thoughts. And we receive from life the opportunity to share the love that we have in our souls with everything around us. Only as we observe things do they come alive. You've heard of the old cliche that a tree falling in a forest with no one to hear makes no sound. We witness, and the world comes alive. We take that harvest of incoming data and we roll it into the responses that make us who we are. The body is glorious and difficult, but it is an illusion. Any scientist will go to great lengths to bore you to tears explaining how the body is made up of atoms, which they have never seen, only the path of their energy. The world is an illusion, a grand illusion. That which goes on inside us is by far the preeminent reality. Consequently, it's very, very important to pay attention to our thoughts. Ra asks some simple questions about our thoughts. What thoughts did you think today? Which of your thoughts were part of the original thought? And when they say the original thought, they are speaking of love or light, love slash light or light slash love. There are two aspects to the infinite creator's thought, and they together create all that there is. In how many of your thoughts did the creation abide? Was love contained? Was service freely given? How would you answer that if someone asked you, really asked you, and wanted to know what you had to say? Because your answer would tell in a minute how much you know about yourself. Our thoughts repeat and repeat. We don't think a thought once and let it go. We think a thought once and keep it for life. We have habits of thought. The Ra Group suggests that in order to use this experience, it is well to come to know ourselves so deeply and so clearly that we forgive ourselves for everything that we have done amiss or that we have failed to do when we should have. when you forgive yourself for all those things which you have not fully integrated, have not fully perfected in your being. You become a much larger person. In forgiving yourself for your imperfect thoughts, you become able for the first time truly to forgive others. I invite you on an adventure. It is an inward adventure, but it contains the universe. Bring along your thoughts, your sense of humor, and your sense of proportion. Choose a few good intentions. And then, my friends, let us ride. Our lances in hand to win the knighthood of higher being.
Okay, anything to add to that, Jim?
No, I think she said it rather well.
I think so too. Thank you, Carla.
Oh.
Okay.
I had no idea how that was going to come out. I just love that quotation mark so well. I thought, well, I'm going to come back. I'm going to do my favorite thing first.
Oh.
It's so much fun to let go and let God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, that's great. That's great. Quick comment from Spaced says that he would like to say he's very glad to hear that you are up to doing the radio show again, and I'm sure a lot of people feel that way. So just wanted to pass that on. Good comment. Okay, first question is from Mark Rammer. I was brought up in a fundamental Christian way, ended up getting married quickly because of the belief that sex outside of marriage was wrong. Now my wife wants to go one direction in life and I want to go another. And even though we get along great and love each other, we still want different paths in life. I feel trapped by marriage and making a promise for the rest of our lives to stay together. Tried to make compromises, but it seems that no amount of compromise can make a city girl live in the wild or a wild man live in the city. We simply desire different things. I feel terrible telling her we need a divorce because of it, but I really don't see another way. So it would appear that after much Blu-ray exchange with her, she is open to compromise about our future. The conversation was not an easy one. I'm still in a very different place of understanding than she is regarding life and understanding the system. She's beginning to understand me more with time, and I must have conversation with her to make sure we're on similar wavelengths. I do love her, and she loves me, and I see no reason now to not try to work it all out. Now, I need to say this was over a couple of week period, okay, that we had been talking already. I do feel she is still stuck in a negative Christian fear-based mindset, but with much analyzing and talking, I'm able to help her out one step at a time. She's willing to expand her thinking, but of course at her own pace. She doesn't believe in an eternal hell and is trying to understand God apart from hell and create some type of relationship with, quote, him. The Bible is very confusing regarding the nature of Yahweh, so of course she will be confused. When she asks me for understanding, I refer her to Jesus' teachings minus the Gospel of John, since they seem to be the most love-based teachings as opposed to fear-based. When I saw her willingness to change a little bit, I saw hope, and that's all I needed. At first, I thought she would never change, but now I see that she can and will at her own pace. Do you have any advice?
Well, Mark, the thing that comes to me is to continue the process that you have begun so well. The one thing that you haven't done yet is separate for a while and run the interesting experiment of living without each other and going your own way while committing to having perhaps weekly conversations, either by letter or over the telephone or Skype. if you and she are not meant to be together, what will happen is what you suspect will happen, a natural separation that gets wider and wider. What may happen is a discovery on both of your parts as to how important the other is and how much one is willing to compromise in order to be with the other person. With nurturing, the commitment to stay together in mind and converse regularly, it's possible that a year apart would be very illuminating to both of you. I can't give a value to the love you have for each other. I can't give a value to the old-fashioned way where a woman simply goes where her man says that they will go without question. I have no reason to object, spiritually speaking, to a separation and a divorce if it comes to that. I always hark back to the promises that you made to each other. You will always be linked to some extent if you want to be, if you need to be, if it's good for you to be. I might suggest a trial separation, a real separation, if you can afford it, where you go and put up a tent somewhere and be a wild man. My husband did it for how many years, Jim?
Six.
6.5 years, I think. He went into the, he had a starter stake that he gave himself by working at things like welding and concrete work, common labor. He took that money and he bought a piece of land and he built a log cabin using the trees on the land. He built a beautiful little homestead, 16 feet square, I think, and thought that he would never leave it. He planned to die there. He was so happy. But Don and I came along, and suddenly he wanted to be with us more than he wanted to be in the country. You cannot predict what is going to happen. I'd say after all of the Blu-ray conversation you have had, perhaps this trial separation would be in order. Mickey, what do you think?
Well, I agree that if they are to be together and it would be a benefit to both of them, that they will be able to see this more clearly by being apart. But I think that the most important thing, if I were in his position, I think what would be most important to me would be doing whatever I did from a position of unconditional love, trying to get there as much as possible with my entire being, so that however I related to the other person, it would be because I was looking for a higher principle, not just what would benefit me. And I think that's really hard to do because we are usually dedicated to outcomes. We want to, you know, we're goal-oriented and driven. But I think if our goal is to be of service and to love unconditionally, then it, in a way, makes our task easier because it's clearer. But it might be still quite difficult to achieve. But that would be my focus, and without a dedication to an outcome other than being totally accepting and loving.
Well, Mickey, would you say then that having no dedication to an outcome could include a trial separation? It sounds as though that kind of dedication would simply be, okay, we're here, let us serve the Creator together.
Well, I think a separation could highlight the actual feelings that are there, if they be towards splitting up and going separate ways, or being together and working together and resolving the difficulty. I think a separation would probably amplify what is already there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I'm reading this question again as you guys are talking, and I'm wondering, well, what exactly is the problem? Because he says they get along great and they love each other, and they recently had a major breakthrough. They had this great Blu-ray communication. They did make some progress. And it sounds like the real issue is, well, he only mentions two things, the difference in spiritual beliefs and the fact that she wants to go one direction in life and he wants to go another. But he doesn't really go into detail about what that is. So I'm wondering how much of it is because of the difference in beliefs. And if that's the case, I would suggest that may not be as big of a deal as it might appear on the surface, because it's just another catalyst. You know, if she's got fear, you know, because of the religious beliefs that she has, I mean, most people do have some sort of fear in some area, and how is working through this fear any different from working through any other fear? And somebody can be of a totally different belief and yet be actually living the law of one in terms of their love and their way of life. So my suggestion would be to look at, you know, to put aside any differences in belief, because, you know, just because she's Christian and he's into the law of one, I mean, I don't think that necessarily needs to be a wedge, you know?
I think that's a really good point, Monica. It's almost as though the city-country debate or difference is a placemaker or, you know, a representative of the difference in philosophy or religion.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I get the feeling that his comment about, you know, she wants, you know, city girl versus wild man was more of a symbol for the difference in their spiritual beliefs, because that seems like, what I'm reading out of what he said, it sounds like that's the real issue. And
I totally agree.
Well, my suggestion is, you know, if as long as she's not, like, constantly badgering him and saying, well, you're going to hell, which he said she's not doing that, then I'd say, hey, look, Carly, you go to church and you're a Christian. I mean, I don't think that needs to get in the way. They don't have to agree on beliefs.
That's totally true. The best preacher that I ever had in my life, a fellow named Father Ben Sanders, who is retired now from ministry. He's doing part-time work. I was confessing to him one time and told him, I confessed my concern for Jim because he never, ever went to church. He's a man of Christ, but he has no interest whatsoever in church services. And he said, Jim doesn't need the church. Jim's church is nature. You know,
His church is what?
It's just nature.
Nature.
That was spiritual.
Oh, beautiful. To hear that from a Christian preacher, that's amazing.
Yeah,
wow.
He's the best man of God that I ever met. And it just totally cut through everything for me. I have not had a single thought since. And he's never resisted my going to church. He's constantly helping me with that and getting me where I need to go for choir and that sort of thing. The differences it seems that the differences are always apparent if you have something higher that you both believe in. And I think that what he's feeling is the lack of that agreement on a higher intention. But, you know, if you take the words away, the form away from Christianity or the law of one, what's left is love. And that, to me, is the higher intention that perhaps the two of them could bond on, love and service.
Exactly what I was getting at. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Beliefs really don't matter, I don't think. All right, very good. I think we covered a lot on that. So hopefully that, you know, can address some some
May
of the issues.
May it be a help to you, blessed one. We love
you.
And
Mark, do let us know if you want to revisit this, or you know, let us know how it goes. Okay, let us know if we can, any of us can help again. All right, the next question is from Spaced. Well, I know a lot of people on the forum have been talking about Dolores Cannon's books, and I think it was mentioned that you yourself recently met with Dolores. I would certainly be interested in hearing what came out of that meeting. Other things I've been interested in recently are the sorts of alternate Earth history that gets unearthed through channeled messages. That was always something that fascinated me about the Law of One books. Another topic I have found intriguing of late is mythology and how mythological figures embody portions of the archetypal mind and the lessons they can teach us about ourselves. Much love to you, Carla, and many thanks for your continuing service.
Well, when I met Dolores Cannon, it was supposed to be one way, according to a fellow that had the best interests of all of us at heart and had his mind set on I was going to be instantly healed. Just from background information, I'm a wheelchair girl. I don't walk, can't walk, and I have had a series of 3 operations on my back to try to just to hold it together, I'm recovering from the 3rd one, hopefully completely. Well, I don't care or know whether I'll walk again. As long as I can do my work, I'm a happy girl. But at any rate, this fella came to us and he wanted to film the thing. He was going to, you know, film me getting up and walking after she does what she does, which is she hypnotizes people, takes them back to before birth, and then asks to speak to their higher selves. And speaking to their higher selves, she says, well, you know, is this condition possible to be healed now? And if the higher self says yes, then the person is instantly healed. And she's had this happen time and time again. Well, we had a little problem because in the Ra experience that we had, Ra specifically said that I needed to have someone keep in physical contact with me so that I would not go out of body. That's not a good place for me to go. And my beloved husband has been very ceaseless in his vigilance and always holds my hand when I meditate or when I channel. So Jim was going to hold my hand, come hell or high water. And Dolores doesn't allow anybody in her hypnotism therapy sessions, even a husband that's holding a hand. Our beloved friend was doing everything but frothing at the mouth because his plans were coming to nothing. But in actuality, Dolores sat down with me out of the kindness of her heart, and we talked for a good 3 hours. She kept looking in my life for what it was that I was carrying that I resented, because usually that's what's happening when you have back trouble, is that you're carrying too much of a heavy load and your back is expressing that. Because after all, the body is the creature of the mind. So whatever you think, therefore you are. She couldn't find it. I mean, we spent 2 hours going through my entire life experience, which has had many twists and turns. She never could find any resentment of anything that's ever happened. So then she talked about, you know, well, what's going on with your husband? And I told her, and Jim's having a lot of difficulty working. He works at lawn service, and he's retirement age, and, you know, it was just getting harder and harder for him to do the work and feel good. He was experiencing a continuing flare-up of osteoarthritis, and it was just really hurting. And she said, well, that's it. She said, it wasn't you at all. You've been together so long, and you love each other so much, you've become one. And you're trying to carry his pain. And I said, wow, you know, that really sounds right. I need not to do that, huh? And she said, yeah. She said, I would not have hypnotized you anyway. You don't need it. You're already there. She said, what you need to do is do a few affirmations daily and just keep your mind on these affirmations, and your body will follow suit. So I started the affirmations immediately, and I have found myself getting stronger every day, and I think that the affirmations will heal me to the extent that I should be healed. It's difficult for outsiders to think that one is healed if one can't walk. But before birth, the Ra group said that I limited myself so that I could do inner work. I wouldn't have done inner work otherwise because I love to do stuff, you know, cook and garden and just all kinds of you know, things. So at any rate, that was the upshot of it, was that we had a wonderful meeting, and she expressed the greatest admiration for my work, and I expressed the greatest admiration for her work, and we parted on the most excellent of terms. And the only one that was truly unhappy was the guy that wanted me to be healed instantly. That did not happen. Let's see, Mickey, why don't you talk about the second one, the alternative Earth histories, and I'll talk about myth when you're done with that.
Well, I'm also interested in the various channelings and what they have to say about the history of the planet, because our written history goes back not too much more than 6 to 10,000 years. You know, biblically, we're sort of limited by the concept of the 7 days it took, or 6 days, and one of rest for God to create the universe. And there seems to be a whole lot more to it than that, and I think we all sort of intuit that. So when we come into possession of information that gives us a little illumination on what came before this, it's kind of exciting, because I think it speaks to something deep in our soul, in our veins, in our atomic particles, that, you know, we've been around a while, we've been here, and there have been things going on. We just have the smallest outlook on, you know, we scratched the surface with our actual paleontology and archaeology and the various scientific pursuits and discovering what came before us today. And looking back at what Ra had to say, it does make a lot of sense when you look at the variety of species we have on this planet. There hasn't been a really good explanation as to why we have so many different types of people, other than the one that Ra suggested, that there were at least 17 other or 16 other planets that provided a population for Earth so that they could have another shot at making the choice and going on past their density into the fourth. And you look at everything around the planet. The heads of Easter Island, I think, are one of the most fascinating to me, that 60 or so thousand years ago, those and the lines of Nazca in South America were created to have an impact upon the populations at that time. That the heads of Easter Island were actually created by negatively oriented entities that imbued those heads with nothing but power, and that power would cause people to be in awe of them, to want to worship them, to bow down to them, and to follow any type of dictate that could be ascribed to those heads. And all of this interaction between positive and negative sources and forces over apparently 75,000 or so years has been the result of planet Earth being a real bubbling pot of life and potential and experience and strife and empire and just a whole saga of the most incredible catalyst that human beings could imagine has apparently happened here on this planet. And when we begin to discover more about the various civilizations, you know, not just the Egyptians, but more about the mysterious Atlanteans and going back even further to those civilizations in South America and in Tibet that existed even longer ago, it's like, you know, the ultimate genealogy. It's fun to discover that this experience here on this planet has been very, very rich, and it continues to be rich. And if you look at the sources of the populations of this planet and how they've gone through various changes here, as well as elsewhere, it's there's just so much to draw from. And I think getting information from a channel source or any source is really something that gives us a better idea about where we came from, and in reverse, know where we're going as well.
Excuse me, before you go on, Carla, I just have a quick question for Jim regarding what you said about the statues at Easter Island being, they were created by negative entities. What is that based on? Or
that was what Ra had to say about them, that it was actually fourth density entities. They weren't really high up on the pecking order either, but they had used the ability to create mentally by thinking a thing.
They wanted to make people have fear. They wanted to produce... They wanted something to produce fear in them, because for negative entities, fear is the desired result. They can eat that fear as if it were food. So they were creating them, supposedly, according to those of Ra, in order to create fear. An interesting proposition, thesis, whatever.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, as to... something that's intriguing. Mythology is truly so intriguing, and the more you read, the deeper your interest becomes. It's a flower that keeps opening endlessly. You've probably already discovered the work of Carl Jung. If you haven't, that is a wonderful place to start. I wouldn't advise trying to read through all the history of mythology on the planet, like James Frazier attempts in The Golden Bough. I'd encourage you to choose your favorite of the mythological systems and read up on the folklore and mythology of that particular race or people, and make your assumptions from there, and then, you know, let them get wider because of knowledge of one particular system. You can study the Greeks, or the Romans, you can study... I personally like to read in Irish mythology, Celtic mythology. It speaks a lot to me. But it's certainly intriguing endlessly, and I think because of what you said, because it speaks to the archetypical mind of all of us, and, you know, what we're made of, and how those stories represent archetypes, and how we represent or embody archetypes at certain times.
Okay. Thank you, Carla. Quick little interjection. I just looked it up in the lawofone.info, and Easter Island, the comments about Easter Island is found in session 20, and it's around 28, 30, 31 is where they're talking about that. And I just wanted to mention also, I guess I'm sure you guys know this, but some of our listeners might not be aware that they have unearthed the heads at Easter Island, and they are, in fact, full statues, the full bodies. They're not just
wow.
heads. So.
I'll be dug on. They're not disembodied.
Oh, really? Y'all hadn't heard that?
Amazing, oh. No.
Yeah, they actually dug down, and the statues go down pretty far. They're full bodies, but they got filled in, you know, over time with all the dirt. So all this time we thought they were just the heads, but no. So,
I mean, it took us
yeah.
this long to dig them out.
Yeah, I'm surprised somebody didn't dig down sooner.
How curious
you know?
Exactly are we?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, the next question, I'm not sure who this is from. It didn't say who, is a suggested topic that they want you to talk about, the life under the polar ice caps.
Well, I've investigated it by reading books. It looks to be that there's a good case to be made of life under the Antarctic ice cap, if not both of them. And the Ra certainly speaks of life in the inner world, sort of. How do they put it, Jim?
Hidden civilizations.
Yeah. So definitely, I would say it's likely that this myth is probably true. But I haven't found the scientific evidence that would make me able to say, well, go to this study, and you will find that photographs taken of blah, 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 and I haven't done that yet. But there does seem to be evidence suggesting that there's activity there and also in other places. We have a lot of cave systems in our planet, some of them very deep. Not just the man-made ones.
A lot of what kind of systems, did you say?
But also the natural ones.
Now, what was that you said? You had, we had a lot of what kind of systems?
Oh, I was saying that there were a lot of them, and then I thought to myself of the places underground that we, in our fear of extinction, have built for those higher up in our hierarchy politically to go to in case of a disaster. You know, there's a lot of underground there. And so I was saying not just the man-made ones, but also the natural ones.
Yeah, Rob suggested that the Earth was honeycombed. Don asked once if the Earth was hollow, because there had been a couple of books written about the hollow Earth theory. And Rob said it was more accurate to say that it was honeycombed. So that there are places and bases inside that have been utilized in the past by civilizations, but not now. However, now, apparently there are extraterrestrial bases of both positive and negative orientation in that honeycomb.
Interesting. I know I've heard of a lot of psychic channels that have talked about communicating with the inner Earth peoples, and I'm wondering if those are those same, you know, positive extraterrestrials that you're referring to.
It's very likely.
Okay, it looks like we have time for maybe just one or two more questions, and the next one is from Scott. I know in my gut that it's possible to awaken all of humanity at once, and as some have suggested, I don't believe that anyone should be left behind or omitted from this progression. In essence, if you shake them hard enough, they will wake up, no doubt. As beings of pure light and love, I think the answer to this is for someone to somehow show their true self by letting their light shine through. My question is, how to go about getting past the membrane that separates us from everything else, our soul? We are all messengers, and I think the key lies in unlocking the programming that is present within us to allow this to happen. Doubt got us in this mess, and it will get us out. What do you think about all of this? Lots of love from Scott.
I sort of like what the Ross said about it, that it was possible in one fine, strong moment for us all to choose the same thing. Other research and scientific interest has shown that if the apes on one island have a way of eating the bananas that's new, eventually that'll spread across the sea, apparently mentally only, to the apes on another island. I think the programming spreads naturally if it's strong enough. So I really don't think that it's the work of one person to unite everybody on Earth at this point. The world is too large. But it's more as if we are all waking up, and if we all begin waking up more and more strongly and seeking love and service more and more strongly, that it's likely that at some tipping point it could happen, that everybody chooses it because it's the obvious thing. It just comes to us. It becomes part of our DNA just as it has become the part of others. So I think our job is not to create of ourselves some heroic figure that stands up on a soapbox and gets everybody's attention and says, this is the way it is. I think our job is to live in such a way that we exemplify and compose ourselves of love in all that we think, do, and say to the best of our poor human ability. And that energy is the absolute most that we can do. And we give that freely to the planet. And if enough people live like that, I think there will be a tipping point for humankind.
Most of the time I don't like commercial sayings because they tend to water down, you know, great thoughts. But I think that there is a saying out these days that's happening in local communities that really exemplifies what Carla's talking about, is, and that is, think globally and act locally. And so many people are doing that, that I think that's the, you know, sort of an entry into this process of tuning into the same wavelength, and maybe at some moment being able to make that choice of polarity, everybody together. I think it's probably never been more possible than it is on the planet now because of our communication and the internet and Facebook and Twitter, and we seem to be having a lot of beginning means of mass communication of the mass mind showing up technologically, you know, sort of like training wheels.
You know, you're right, Jim. I agree totally. That's a great saying. Think globally, act locally. I mean, you know, to
almost
see
every
the big
local
picture.
Co-op has that somewhere in their store.
Yeah, it really is good. And you know, sometimes I think about that, how I'll be driving down the road and I'll notice something, and I think, you know, people have done some good things. You know, there is some a lot of good out there, and that's one of them, definitely.
Yeah.
To hold that vision of the whole planet and yet still take action. And, you know, because that's a question that comes up a lot. People talk about, well, how much action should you take, or should you just sit and meditate all day? And, well, you know, I think different people will have a different ratio of action versus, you know, just positive thinking or meditation or whatever they want to do. I mean, there's some monks that just sit on a mountaintop all day and meditate, and that's what they're doing, and that's wonderful. That's their service. And then there's other people that are more activist oriented. And, but I really like that because it shows, you know, both, you know, think and take action. Do what you can wherever you are. Okay, looks like probably just one last question. This is from Aloneness. See, my mother has been into spirituality for a long time. She says it's her mission to start a spiritual community here, and she's asked me to participate, which at first I thought was a wonderful idea. However, now she says I have to lower my vibration. Otherwise, I won't be able to actually do something. Well, I don't really know how to do that, and I'm not even sure I want to. This is like her dream, mine as well, but slightly different. When I speak about my dreams, she responds with grounding material because she doesn't believe in such dreams anymore. I love her, but I don't know how to deal with this stuff. It is quite unnerving, actually. Does anyone have any suggestions on how to deal with this particular situation? This is from Aloneness.
Well, I would take issue with your mom. It'd be interesting to listen to what she has to say. But I think that there's absolutely no need to lower one's vibration in order to do everything. I think you can perform any task with the greatest love in your heart and the greatest desire to serve, and that creates of that service an absolutely spotlessly shining spiritual sacred act. And I'm talking about cleaning the latrine here. I'm not being saying, well, you should, you know, be a lawyer, and that you can be a lawyer in a way that won't lower your vibration. I'm saying you can be anything. You can do anything. And if your head's in the right place, it becomes a sacred act. I remember when Gandhi told his wife that if she wanted to be part of a spiritual community, she had to clean the toilets. And she was shocked, and she said, you know, she was a well-born aristocrat of the Indian culture, of the highest caste. And, she, you know, she had never seen the inside of a latrine except to use it. I mean, she'd never cleaned anything. It was, just wasn't part of her way. So he said, well, you know, I love you. You're my wife. I will honor you until the day I die. But if you want to be part of this community, you need to clean the latrine. And she decided she did want to be part of it, and so she learned how to scrub up the toilet. And I think that your mom's a little bit off in saying that you have to lower your vibrations. I think you pretty much have to keep your vibrations steady no matter what you do. She was probably giving you symbols. She was probably saying lower your vibrations when what she really meant was be more of a part of the world. A lot of moms want their kids to take hold and make something of themselves, and that generally means to the mom that they're functioning as a unit in society and not just living at home and letting the parents support them. So it probably has issues there that are unspoken in terms of coming of age and what it means to be a mother and a son and how that relationship is going. I would have no idea as to all of the ins and outs of it, but I say keep that vibration very high and learn to clean the toilet.
Now, what about grounding? I know I hear a lot of psychics talk about how they need to stay grounded. And
what that means exactly. I'm searching to understand. Are they saying keep your feet on the ground?
No, it's more like they say their energy's too high and they need to, like, maybe eat some junk food or something, or, you know, to stay grounded. And it'll I don't know. I was hoping you could tell me.
Well, I have no resonance with that way of thinking. I don't think it's necessary for anybody to eat red meat or do any specific thing. I think that if you're grounded, you're grounded in your thoughts. You're grounded in wanting to be of service. You're grounded in having something to live for and something to die for. And then you're grounded by acting. And I think that all of that can be done while you maintain a high vibration. It sometimes doesn't seem as though we're maintaining a high vibration, because when you're in the world and you're trying to be of service, a lot of times things take off and put you in a situation where you're not your best. And you think, well, I've lost it. I've lost my tuning, you know. And, you know, what we're trying to do is to do all that and not lose our tuning. So I don't know. I have no idea. Jim, do you have anything?
No, I'd love your answer, Carla, because I always, Jim, I know I want to let you answer too, but just real quick, I always think in terms of raising my vibration and staying tuned, like you say, and yet they're talking as though their vibration is too high and they want to lower it. Do you think anybody can have too high of a vibration?
No, I don't. I think it's a matter of choices. I think that I think it takes a higher vibration to clean the toilet than it does to sit around and meditate.
Thank you. I love your answer. Jim, do you have anything to add to that?
Only in a specific situation. I mean, sometimes you hear about people who are new to meditation, and perhaps they meditate a little too long for the first few times, and they become, I guess the hippie term for it, spacey. It's suggested that you take your shoes off and walk actually outside on the ground, preferably on dirt. That helps bring me back down. But that's a very special situation, and I don't think that, you know, most people have to worry about that in their daily round of activities.
Well, then what would that spaciness be? Is it that they're dwelling too high in the higher chakras and they're not, their lower chakras are blocked, maybe? Or, I mean, I'm just wondering.
Well, Ra always suggests that we proceed on our journey in as balanced a fashion as we can, that it is possible to get out of balance if you work too much on higher centers before you have your lower centers as your foundation. A lot of people, when they begin the spiritual journey, there's a tendency to devalue the material world in the lower energy centers of red and orange and yellow that deal specifically with the third dimension.
Life on Earth.
Right, life on Earth. And they go right away for the heart or communication or, you know, the brow chakra. And it is possible to begin to lose touch with reality if you do that too often. It happens most frequently with the use of hallucinogenic drugs that it takes you to a place that you can't maintain on your own. And you can basically do that by meditating too much in the beginning. Meditation is an activity that actually has effects. And it needs to be viewed with, care and common sense, and begin it in a way that isn't inviting overstimulation. Most people don't have to worry about that. Some people are naturally psychically gifted, and that's mostly, I think, what happens to them if they aren't careful in their balanced approach to meditation in the beginning.
Well, in that case, then, wouldn't it make more sense to maybe follow the suggestions like what Carla gave in her book, The Law of One, 101, The Choice, about balancing all the chakras rather than just eating a hamburger or a candy bar? I mean, it seems to me
right.
Like it'd make more sense to deal with.
Doing a balancing exercise.
Yeah, the balancing exercise.
Yeah.
Much more to the point.
A good way of doing that. But that's not usual that people do that. It's not usually people have problems either, because most people aren't naturally gifted.
Okay, quick plug for the book, Law of One 101, The Choice. Great book. You can get that at llresearch.org. And we're going to go ahead and close. We're out of time. Thank you so much, Carla and Jim. So good to have you back, Carla.
It's been a joy.
All right. Okay, you've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit llresearch.org and buy Carla's books. They're great. Okay, and you can check out the Law of One material and lots of other cool stuff, channeling transcripts and all kinds of wonderful material there. And you can also visit bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4th.org. Thanks for listening. We are here every week. You can ask questions, submit your questions or discussion topics at bringforth.org under Forum 2, submitting questions for the radio show. And we will be here next Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We're here every Friday. We'll see you then.